from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffy.
Hit man! Oh, what a hit that one! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the border, with Jeff Snyder and Nick Dark.
Hang it up there!
I think we're ready to get started. We got to talk to our editor, by the way. There's a couple times stuff's been left in here that's not supposed to be in here.
Yeah, I know. Once we start editing, look, I got an idea this time, though.
How do you want to start?
Let's start with Dust in the Wing. You have a beautiful voice,
we're
right?
We're not going to do that.
Yeah, no.
No.
Come on.
No, what else do you have?
Okay, all right.
I wish I could sing this. I don't know it.
Come on. How's that work? You were kind of getting into it.
I was. I was bumping my head a little
bit. You promise me you'll cut this.
Here's how we're going to start.
All right.
Mark.
That's a good joke. We've had some editing problems out there, people. We know. Okay?
We know. We're aware of those. We leave things in.
Okay.
We should fire our editor.
Just don't tell anybody who it is.
Nope.
Okay.
As
we always say, welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks, episode 10.
10! We made it to 10.
Doubles L digits.
That means we can stop now, doesn't it?
Yep, that means we're over.
Yeah.
Well, the contract's up. We got to renegotiate the contracts. It gets tough.
We'll see if we can do a little better this time for us. We're definitely not getting paid what we're worth.
Yeah.
For this.
how was your weekend? I was out in Seattle. I want to talk about that quickly. But how was your weekend? First, do you tell me?
I had a great weekend. I had a good time I was pretty heavily involved in the Philly game this time around. Just kind of going around, putting the pieces together a little bit, like helping some people out. It was kind of nice to be on that side of it again. I've been, I think, on the production side a lot, you know, since we started. And it was kind of interesting to be out on the live show side, out there on the ground.
Well, I'm jealous because you were able to see the first ever launching of the NITF game, or Not in the Face.
Not in the Face. I tell you right now, you are going to really enjoy Not in the Face when you get your first chance.
Yes, so you should see a Philly game, because Not in the Face is pretty good.
It's a good game.
Yeah, out in Seattle, we were flew up there, got to take the bus with the guys. Good group of guys. Really like them. Got to spend some time with Danny Tridiak, with Mario O'Brien, Isaac Entz. I could keep naming all the names. Duncan Lynn, who plays some really fine defense. I was very impressed with his defense at the game. Bryson Allring Fox. Sounds like a famous man's name. He's got all these cool names. Played some darts against Tridiak and Donnie Clark, I'm a big fan of Donnie Clark. His outfit was cowboy on top, business in the middle, cowboy on the bottom. And then I think business again on the feet. So
what was
just,
the business yeah, in the know, middle? Was he wearing a cummerbund?
He was. he was well done. But so we were playing darts, and I told them about how you're very good at darts, and I needed you there because I was winning. I was doing my thing. But Tridiak can throw 3 darts in 2 seconds, and he hits 16 every time.
That's his number.
I'm serious. He throws the 3 darts.
I saw a tweet about that.
They're all out of his hand at the same time, which I think should be illegal.
I don't think that's allowed.
And they're all in 16. So just don't play cricket with him.
Don't play cricket. Or start at 16.
Start at 16, because he can't miss that thing. But really, really good group of guys. And, of course, I got to spend time with Matt Sewell. Matt Sewell and I were, like, on a date. We went out for sushi.
You went out for sushi? You went to a women's soccer game? National Women's Soccer League match between Seattle and...
Seattle Reign and Houston Dash.
Houston Dash.
And that was good. It was fun to compare our league to their league and see what they're doing. And we just got a good game. They got some good stuff, too, though. I mean, they put on a good production. So there's a lot of things to aspire to for what they're doing. But I will tell you, they had 2,200 people at their game. The 600 plus that was at the Seattle game were louder than that 2,200. They were crazy. You can see it on the footage. I'll give a shout out to Ted Werbel, who is their host, and he's phenomenal. He really is. I mean, he's not even that good yet, to be honest. Like, he's just a natural, but he is just getting started. But they react to him like crazy. I mean, he gets me pumped up. You know, like, it's just weird if the commissioner's running around, you know, chasing Rainmaker's cash. but I wanted to. And he also did the thing that, so I think we are, how many games have played? Whatever we are, we're 10 for 10 in firing a t-shirt over the stands.
Yeah, there hasn't, we haven't seen anyone get that perfect yet. There's always one t-shirt that's just in the road behind the stadium.
Yeah, just launched over the stadium. So he has a t-shirt cannon, which is impressive. So I, but a great experience. Great to be up there. Great to see everybody. I got to see Gemma Perez, too, and we got to hang out.
Oh, nice.
Have a nice talk. She took me to get Thai food. They asked me on a scale from 1 to 5 how hot I would like it. What number do you think I picked?
I'm going to say you were a 3.
I was.
Because you didn't want to get too much of the head sweat going.
Yes. Yeah, so you know me too well. So I really wanted to pick 5, but let me tell you what. You don't order a 5 when you're in a suit.
No.
Right, it'll just...
There are reasons. Yeah, let's just leave it at that. There are reasons.
Don't order a 5 in a suit. There never a 5 in a suit. That should be... That's knowledge passed.
That's knowledge passed. Tips from Jeff. Just like that cold shower tip that everyone's hated so much.
They have not hated it.
A few people have hated it.
Best tweet yet. It's something like Coach Nunez was like, went in there for 10 seconds and then did it for 20 more because manned up or whatever. Something like that. It made me happy. But have you tried it?
No. No, I'm not going to do that.
Because you should try it.
Yeah, well.
Cold water is good for the soul.
Yeah, that's what I hear.
And good for the...
I'll stick with chicken soup.
All right, well, that's the Nick Darling wake-up tip. So you should never take wake-up tips from Nick Darling. Okay.
Oh, now, yeah, wake-up tips I have lots of. Going to sleep tips are the problems. That's where my problems are.
You should give tips on how to not sleep on transportation.
It's impossible. I've never slept on a plane.
Don't ever go anywhere with Nick Darling. I'm telling you. I can't even begin. You don't sleep.
I think that's a story for another day.
You
really.
Don't sleep.
Yeah, I don't
sleep. We could be up for 50 hours straight. Nick could look exhausted. His eyes are bloodshot. If you put him on a bus, he won't sleep.
No, I have a... It's a problem.
It's a superpower.
Okay, let's call it a superpower. Right? That's better than problem.
Superpower.
I'm going to go with superpower.
My brother says his superpower is apparently low cholesterol. So... So this is true. He went and got a test for cholesterol, and his cholesterol was 20. I'm like, that's...
That actually sounds unhealthy.
Right, that's like... He's like, my body doesn't do cholesterol. I'm a super... It's a superpower. Your superpower is this... Yeah, I don't know. You don't sleep. Sleeplessness on a bus.
I call it unsleep.
Unsleep. Yeah. Ooh, I like that.
Unsleep.
Okay. All right, let's get in.
Yeah, let's jump into this thing.
First segment.
We're going to go right to the first segment. Yeah, what are we doing first?
I think we got a little USAU stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. We're going to revisit that. Let's.
So obviously we talked about them before and haven't brought them up much or even, I don't even remember if at all since.
I don't think much at all.
And Nick and I talked about this and we're like, it's hard to talk about USAU because all that happens is a bunch of negativity.
Yeah.
And this job is too fun to talk about the negativity stuff. But I had a lot of people as I've traveled around, they want to hear more. They want to hear more of our thoughts. So, you know, all I can tell you is that, or what I can tell you is progress so far is we did go back and forth for a little bit. And, if you've read up on anything, they did shoot us down as much as they could. On every part of our proposal.
Mm-hmm.
They cited gender equity as one of the reasons.
Right? Yeah, that one came up for sure. It was like refs, gender equity.
Spirit of the game refs. Or spirit of the game gender equity.
Spirit of the game gender equity.
And that we weren't financially stable yet.
Did they use that?
Yeah, I mean, they didn't ask us. They just told us we weren't.
Oh, okay.
So,
interesting. Yep. We'll take that.
I would do it that way too. I can tell you that we did write to them and say, look, we still would like to donate towards your youth development. So we'll donate $10,000, not as a show. I'm sure they took it that way. But it was like, look, just use this towards youth development because we don't have the bandwidth to do that. They basically wrote back and said, sure, you can do that. We'll take your donation, but we're going to use it as we please. We don't earmark any funds. So I thought, well... That's a weird response, I thought. Like, I guess maybe they don't like us that much, so it's not surprising, but it's like, you're going to take our 10 grand and just do whatever you want with it? That's kind of a weird counterproposal. So we're stuck in there somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there'll be... I mean, obviously the conversation is going to be ongoing with them. Any membership organization is a fluid, changing thing. There's going to be different people coming in and out, and hopefully, over time, we'll get closer together on some things and be able to find some ways to work together. But at this point, I think we've said it before, the reason we haven't talked a lot about them is because it's a bit of a distraction.
Yeah.
It's a negative kind of distraction, and that's why we've sort of left it off the list for the podcast. and why we've just sort of quietly been pursuing some back and forth with him for the past few months. But there really hasn't been any progress to report, and so there's not all that much to talk about.
Yeah, and the truth is, whether people realize this or not, they have nothing to do with our success directly, and we have nothing to do with their success directly, or failure. We have nothing to do with it. Because this is, you know, whatever we do is kind of on us. But in terms of educating the sport about Ultimate Frisbee, we're all going to do our part. And the fact that we're here and the AUDL's here and USAU's here, it's just we're all doing our part. Whether we like it or not, we're all growing the pie.
We're all helping each other regardless.
We're helping each other way more than we're hurting each other. And I don't think people realize that. I will say that one of the things they mentioned was gender equity, which I really didn't like.
Yeah.
Because we have many females who work for our organization, and I think they feel, whatever the word is, they feel slighted by that statement. Like, well, I work here. You know, I'm a GM, or I'm a director of events, or I'm part of the dance team, whatever it is. I'm not, you know, why is that not count for me being a part of this? I didn't like that. I don't like how that is put up there.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. We clearly don't offer some kind of guaranteed positions on teams to play on the field, right? We don't do that. Doesn't mean we don't support women's ultimate, and we don't, you know, include female players in clinics and include, you know, club teams and fundraising events. And, you know, I mean, we have a good event going on this weekend. I'm pretty excited about down in D.C.
Yeah.
The Scandal team working with the D.C. Current, doing some fundraising to help support them through their club series. Because as we know, that is not a cheap undertaking going through a club series. I think I heard some club teams this year, their dues are $4,000 or $5,000.
$5,600 is the highest I've heard. Yeah,
$5,600 to play for per person to play in the fall series.
Yeah,
for the top club team. So Scandal has a bill to pay, and you know, I think even though USAU is not wrong, we don't carve out a special place for women on the field. It's not the type of league that we run. We still, I think, we want to be as supportive as we can, because we think that the women's game is progressing by leaps and bounds, and that someday we will have women playing on our teams because they're going to be good enough to do it.
Yeah, I mean, if you know us, you know we both feel quite passionately about that, especially with daughters out there and the things, you know, the future as we see it. It just feels like, again, I don't really care to speak about this too much. I really don't. But it just seems like, bad lessons being taught in some ways, and a bit hypocritical. I saw that USAU tweeted out that Ryan Farrell was in Maxim magazine, which I think is awesome. I'm like, hell yeah.
I like Ultimate being featured in Maxim magazine. That's fantastic.
We were in Maxim magazine.
In Germany?
In Germany, yes.
Germany, yeah. Ulti Photos was very excited about that because there's like a 2-page photo spread in there. I still haven't gotten that article fully translated for me. And I have a guy who speaks German right down the hall in my apartment building. I could take care of this.
It was really cool.
It was cool.
It's awesome anytime you get it. The only thing that hit me when I saw it, which just gave me a little twinge, I'm like, and I don't know how to say this the right way, because I really like Maxim magazine and I respect them. But if you're talking about gender equity, or at least like the way you would think Ultimate Frisbee would see it, or USAU would see it, look at their Twitter profile picture. It's, you know, it's a bikini clad woman, and they have some weird articles in there that,
yeah, you say you like Maxim magazine. I'm a little uncomfortable with Maxim magazine.
It's ridiculous.
It goes a little bit far for me from times, but
you know what? It's just Bachelor magazine. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's focused completely on men and what they want to see.
Right.
So for me, it's like, all right, well, you won't work with us because we don't have gender equity, but you're going to brag about Maxim. Okay. What can I do? What can I say? Fine.
Yeah. Again, it just becomes a pissing match when we talk about this stuff, and I'm not that interested.
Me neither.
I think we move on.
So if you guys have questions for us, we'll answer them.
We will answer questions.
But know that we see it as a distraction and having no bearing to the MOU whatsoever. Because it really doesn't, whether you see it or not.
Yeah, I mean, because it can't. You know, if there were opportunities there, we would take those opportunities. But there aren't opportunities there right now, so we develop our programming in such a way that is functional and works. We're not going to bang our head against that wall.
Yep. I mean, there's so many other walls.
Man, we had a lot of walls to bang our heads
against. And there's only one head. You know, so there's a lot of walls to hit with only one
head. It's a very large head, though.
It does. You have a
thick skull.
You do.
Yeah.
You have a skull for heading walls. Okay, so we wanted to get into, so there was some craziness in sports.
Segment 2, racism in sports.
Right. And boy, were there some good articles about it. Let's talk David Sterling.
David Sterling.
Who, I'm actually, you know, we haven't talked about this too much previous, and we...
No, we kind of saved it for here.
Yeah, we do have some heated debates on things.
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Is this going to happen now?
Well, it might. You know, right. I have the tendency to call you bad names, and you have the tendency to call me a bad human.
Now I understand why we're recording in separate rooms today.
Yeah. Why is this glass and this chain-like fence here? But so if you haven't heard about it, David Sterling is the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
I guess let's go through a little bit of basics. Has a history of being a racist.
Like a pretty clear history. I think probably the worst thing was that he was at one point, he's kind of a slumlord. He runs like a lot of low-income sort of rental kind of things. And he was... what was his statement? He said he didn't want to rent to black people. He would try not to rent to black
people
because he thought
they
were smelled bad and attracted vermin.
Yeah.
I mean, so this is not a nice guy in general. And kind of a well-known, like, he's kind of a racist dude.
Yeah, but did you ever... I've never heard about him before in my life.
You know, no, I mean, I haven't heard the stories.
Right.
That story apparently now, like all these articles are resurfacing, stuff had been written about that and about him, but it hadn't made its way up to, like... the cable news giants, you know,
yeah.
We hadn't really seen it there until now.
So what happened was and this story gets weird. I mean, if you haven't heard about it, you might be in a closet somewhere, but this story gets weird. He has a girlfriend who is half black. I don't know what her ethnicity is, but she's half black, right?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Her mother, I think, is African-American. Yeah.
And she... has recorded, or somehow this conversation is recorded of him telling her, and you have to listen, if you haven't listened to it, so you have to listen to it. He is telling her how he doesn't want her to bring her black friends around because it's a bad image. So don't bring black people to the games. And one of the things that he says that was most surprising to me, and I've talked about this, because you have to be careful when you're in charge, right? You have to be, because you have a responsibility as a leader, and if you lose track, and your ego gets in the way, you can do some really bad things. One of the things he says is, she says, well, you have all these black people playing for you. He says, who gives them this game? Who pays for the court that they're on? Who allows them to do this? Right? And the problem...
Oh,
so here's the problem. So I just want to hit this for 1 second. The problem with that is, as a leader, he went onto the wrong side. He believes that he's like an opportunity giver, right? And he doesn't see it. It's a two-way street. Without them, you suck. Without you, they suck. Right? There's no like, you know, you're not doing them like this huge favor. It's not charity.
No.
You need them very badly.
Absolutely.
And they need you. So, but he believes it, like, you could tell he believed he was, you know, the opportunity giver.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so, the NBA decides that they are going to ban him for life.
Yeah.
And give him a $2.5 million fine. And that they are going to exercise the right, if possible, to make him sell the Clippers.
Right. So the $2.5 million fine is the highest fine they can give. And, you know, not a huge amount of money for that gentleman. But a significant fine. And then in terms of forcing him to sell, I think that they require... a 75% vote by the board to force him to sell. This is really a common mechanism in sports. The board of owners always has the ability to force another owner to sell on some level. You know, however many, you know, some sort of supermajority to get that vote through. And so what the commissioner is saying is that he's going to ask the board to vote in that way. And I imagine that they'll go along with it.
So what do you think? Do you think it was right to do that? Give him the fine, kick him out, ban him for life?
I mean, I think you're in a spot where you were kind of forced into doing that. From a PR perspective and a marketing perspective, yeah, I think it was the right move. I think it's what you had to do. Now, should you have maybe addressed this before? I think that we can probably fault the NBA for a failure to address, you know, this man's moral, shall we say, for lack of a better word, shortcomings before. I think you have a certain responsibility to assure that the people that are involved in your organization have a level of integrity and have a level of sort of the image that you're looking for in your league and in your business, for that matter. I remember hearing a book, and we may have to use my little rubber ducky sound. I read a book a few years ago called The No Asshole Rule. And it's basically talks about how, you know, there's always this defense of people who are jerks in the workplace and because they're effective. But it turns out that if you actually study these things, that these are poisonous people that actually ruin organizations and that lead to points like this. So if you had quietly dealt with this situation, knowing that he had these problems earlier, perhaps you could have avoided this explosion that happened now.
Yeah.
And then on the other side of that, too, is what kind of disturbs me about this story, and I think there's been a few people that have written about it, including Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I read his article, is that this is a person, the woman who recorded him did something very illegal and very sleazy.
Really
in California,
sleazy.
It's completely illegal to do that. So she could be arrested for this and may still be.
I hope she is. I didn't like it at all. It's sleazy.
It's very sleazy. You know, I understand that you're trying to figure out a way to deal with somebody who's, you know, poisonous in your life and a problem in your life, but this is not the right way to do it. And, you know, we just had in this country a huge, you know, upsurge of animosity toward the NSA for recording our lives and tracking things that we didn't want them to track. And now we have this tape and we have this sort of TMZ publicity, like, horribleness that I think the American media has gotten itself caught up into. And look, in the end, I'm going to stand by saying I think the NBA is better off without this guy as an owner. I think they're better off without this type of person in their organization. I don't like anything about the way everything happened, but I think in the end, you know, sort of justice is served to some extent. But I think it needs to be served on the other end maybe as well.
Yeah, I mean, Machiavellian ethics don't apply, I don't think, to this. Like, you don't get to be like, well, I caught him. I caught him illegally, but at least I caught him. And it reminds me of, you know, A Few Good Men at the end. They're not convicted guilty for anything except, you know, conduct unbecoming a Marine, and therefore they're still kicked out. And I think that's what she deserves. That's the conduct you did was incorrect, and you need to pay your price for it, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely illegal.
Yeah,
in California.
It's illegal. You didn't save the NBA. I mean, yes, you caught a bad man, but you caught a bad man doing the wrong thing.
And if, you know, if she's willing to get punished for that and she feels it was worth it, then that's life. I mean,
yeah.
Those are your trade-offs.
Exactly.
But I'm just, you know, I'm so concerned that, you know, as I think it was Kareem that said it, that you're going to see her next week on, you know, Kathy Lee and Hoda
yep.
trading recipes.
You are.
And that's the worry, because it's a dangerous precedent. And I think who's the other NBA owner that came out? There's another guy that came out and said this is a slippery slope and this is kind of a dangerous precedent. Again, I think NBA's hands were tied.
Yeah.
But
I mean, she's going. If the only thing that's going to stop her from, or the only thing that stops her is her agent. She gets the right agent, she'll be on Dancing with the Stars. She'll have a book. She'll pay all her dues, and then she'll get a whole bunch of dues forwarded to her. I think here's my biggest issue. And Isaac Saul, who we always enjoy reading his stuff, right? I think it was him, showed some statistics about America. Where, you know, America don't they lead the world? Don't we lead the world in incarceration? We love to throw people in jail,
yeah,
right?
We love putting people in jail.
And we love to say when someone screws up, fire them. Get them out.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a line from The Office. He says, I don't fire, I inspire. But I to tell you what, with all kidding aside, I really do believe that. I think I don't like banning Sterling for life. I think it should have been given this way. She said, look, you're an 85-year-old man who has a really bad track record. So we're going to give you two choices. One is you need to go through a rehabilitation so that you can show the world, just like Michael Vick did. Michael Vick was in dogfighting. And to get back on track, he had to change his life.
He had to go to prison.
He had to go to prison. But to get back in the NBA or the NFL, he had to prove his life different. And I think Sterling should have had been afforded the same thing. You need to go to classes, rehabilitation. You need to prove to the world in this place that you're a better person. And he could decline it and then get banned. I don't know. I just don't like kicking people out. You gotta fight for them. Like even if they're your screwed up family, you gotta fight for them.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just think that there are certain situations where, as a business, we talked about this with the free speech thing. Everybody gets ticked off because they're like, well, it's free speech. You can say whatever you want. Why are these people getting fired for saying terrible things? That doesn't seem right. It's like, yeah, free speech doesn't protect it allows you to be an idiot without getting thrown in jail, but it doesn't allow your idiocy to protect you from the repercussions of your job or your
right.
friends. Like, you can't say something terrible to a friend and have them walk away with me. Like, free speech, dude. Like, when, where are you going?
Right.
Like, I'm just exercising my rights. Like, it doesn't work that way. So I think in this case, the NBA is like, this is too, it's too terrible. Like, we don't want this guy around. We have a lot of players who are, you know, emotionally, like, hurt by this. And I don't think that's a weird thing to be hurt by.
Yeah.
It's a thing to be hurt by. You get the guy who owns and runs your team telling you that you're like children that he provides for, and you're okay to make money off of it, but you're not okay to stand next to his wife. Like, what are you going to do with that guy?
What he said was, look, he would have been better if he was just said a bunch of racist things, right?
Yeah, he said even worse things than that somehow.
The unfortunate part for him is, I mean, it was bad. I mean, he basically said that segregation, not even segregation, like the just a worst of a human. Like, he was bad.
Yeah.
And I get it. Still, I think it says a lot about an organization when they say, you know what, we're going to try our best. And it would have been painted horribly. People would be pissed off. But I like it. I'll also say this, which the players don't need to do it now because he's been kicked out. But I would have been disappointed if the players, all of them together, didn't boycott a game.
I think it was coming. You know, I heard on ESPN this morning they were talking about it a little bit, and apparently the next Clippers game, the one that they played, I guess, last night and won, before that ban was put in place, before the fine came out, the intent was for them not to play.
Good.
So, you know, I don't know. Who knows how that would have played out? Would the other team have agreed not to play as well and sort of scratched the game, or would they have forfeited the game? I don't know how that would have played out. But, yeah, I think a lot of the people who are playing and a lot of the staff and all those people were hurt enough by this that there was going to be a pretty over the top response. Not even over the top, but perfectly reasonable and big response to it.
Yeah. I just thought for me, they'd be like, look, you need to tell us what we're doing or we're not playing because you can't carry this out because it's too big of a deal. You know, my boss doesn't think my family should show up, right? Again, there's a whole lot of things wrong with how lots of things went down, but they deserved an answer, and they got one. So it's a different world today. David Sterling, 50 years ago, he would never be in this situation ever because there's no cell phones, there's no recording devices, there's no nothing. You know, Burt Reynolds wouldn't make it today.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is as a person in that position, and as a person in any position, you have to be cognizant all the time that, you know, what you're saying and what you're doing is being scrutinized. And, you know, it's part of the trade-off for being super, super rich.
Yeah. Yeah, and rich doesn't make you any different than anybody else. You can still be a jerk and a fool. You know what?
Certainly can.
One thing I do hate this, because I think we feel like it's okay to be like, well, jerks, they're jerks, so we should get rid of them. We don't. There's too many jerks in the world to get rid of them all.
I think that we are in a finger wagging like rut a lot of times, you know. And unfortunately, there's a lot. Yeah, as you said, there's a lot of jerks out there. I think that there are certain types of jerks though that we have decided are not acceptable anymore, right? You can be a jerk in a lot of different ways, but to be a racist and to treat another group of people as inferior, we're not going to stand for it.
Yeah, but what did we really stop? We just set a rich racist loose. Like, now he's got nothing better to do. Right now he doesn't have something to keep his mind. I mean, seriously. Now, he's not going to change.
Oh, no.
Because like, here's the thing. Here's the reason I like the rehabilitation part of it. If you give a guy a choice like that, like you have the choice to go through this rehabilitation publicly or quit, or not be a part of the NBA, it would kill him. Like, it hurts him very badly that he's not part of the NBA. That's, like, his thing. That's his status.
Yeah.
So you've hurt him. There's a knife wounding him. But you haven't taken all his money. The dude is still massively rich and can go do lots of stuff and can go on treating people. He's not going to learn anything. He's not going to teach anything except what he already has. You just stuck him. But if you gave him the choice to stay there and rehabilitate, it would make a big difference. Now there's a guy with a whole lot of money who maybe, even at his 85 years of age, could have changed a whole lot of opinions, shown a whole lot of people different ways. You know, there's a whole bunch of other people who are racist out there who just support the guy now. Like, well, they're he's going to, you know, have these people who are like, well, he got kicked out, but I agree with him. Imagine if he had changed his ways, though, in a couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, you already you can see those articles floating around Twitter and Facebook if you look around.
The free speech articles, right? Like, well, he just said what he thinks, and he should have never been caught. You know, people agree with him, even though they're not going to say it.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah, they're gonna paint it in a different corner. But, yep, it's absolutely the case. And, you know, I think what is important about these, we need to take away what's important about these stories and what's worth noting about these stories. The fact that, you know, we think about ourselves as being really far along, but really we're not that far out of a very racist past. And we still have a lot of people with those ideas around. And it's a problem not just in the United States, it's a problem across the world. We had the big story in soccer this past week where somebody threw a banana on the field. And this is a thing that the sort of racists in Spain like to do, is throw bananas at black players on the field.
It was Balotelli they were torturing for some time,
they
right?
They tortured Balotelli for a while, but that's not who it was this time. Who was it? He the best part about it was he picked it up, peeled it, and ate it. Which I really respect it, and I wish I had researched this before coming on the podcast.
They start throwing poison bananas, though. So that's
not a good policy. But then the club and like FIFA itself had this sort of "we're all monkeys" campaign going on. There's been this big Twitter response to it, and people coming out and being strongly opposed to this kind of thing. And I think it's a reminder. It's an important reminder that we're not as far along as we think we are.
Yeah, it hasn't been that long.
It hasn't been that long.
You know, I mean, I brought this up to you, too, that David Sterling is a Jewish man. And that really disappoints me. Like, you are a Jewish man. You know, what is it, 70 years ago? 70-some years ago, your people were going through an attempted genocide. And, like, you brought up the point that the people who've been hurt tend to do the actions. But it's like, come on, man. Like, you went through something that was... They should have taught you not to be like this. It's a frustrating thing. But you're right. It's not that long ago. In 70 years, you can have a Jewish man go from a crazy persecution to being a persecutor. Man. So it doesn't take that long to forget. It's and to act differently.
Absolutely true. So, yeah, I think, to close on this, it's just it was a sad situation in general. It's sad to see that distract from the playoffs and basketball, all the fun that people have doing it. It's a disturbing situation. The idea that someone privately tape recorded it and then that becomes like the biggest piece of news in the United States overnight,
right.
Even though this guy is clearly has other problems and there's plenty of other things going on in the world. And then in the end, I'm going to say, you have your rehabilitation idea, which I think is, complicated. And I think the NBA remained the move they had to make and made the right move.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll move on to our next segment. We'll leave you with this. If you have thoughts, you can tweet at us at Cleats Cufflinks, at Jeff Snader, or at Nick Darling. The parting thought I'll give you is the NAACP had recently awarded this man image awards.
They took them back.
Yeah. So right? just remember this. Money corrupts all men, all women, right? There are many people who could have made a stand before that, but you know what? They took the money. So don't ever take the money. Money will never make you happy. Money will never buy happiness. It does buy freedom, and freedom can award a bit of happiness, but it's a much better road to just stick with your values. Money ain't going to buy you nothing. So shame on the people before him who should have stood against him. I'm going to end with that.
All right, I'll let you end there.
All right. Our next segment, you have some nifty little a survey, right?
Yeah, I just thought this was interesting enough to talk to, because we had this little bit in the beginning of the show where we talked about Women's Ultimate, and we talked about female players, and we talked about, we have this conversation a lot, and we have this conversation with the women we have in the office a lot, like how can we help serve Women's Ultimate? What are the sorts of things we can do? Because we know that we aren't in a position to create a women's league at the moment. Again, if someone wants to do it, we're here for you.
We'll rock it.
Huge amounts of help for you coming from us, but we're not in that position right now. But we do want to find ways where we can have a positive effect on the growth of the women's game, and especially with kids, like getting it introduced into schools and getting it more officially recognized in colleges really relies on the women's game being strong and robust. Mm-hmm. And so I came across on Twitter a survey from Without Limits, and that's withoutlimitsultimate.com, and they did a female player survey. And, you know, I read through it, and it was actually an impressive survey. Hmm. You know, we've carried out surveys and stuff of fans and things like that and players, and we know what the response rates are. And they got a nice response rate. They ended up getting over 1,500 respondents from 46 states and 4 countries.
That's a lot.
So that's a pretty good...
That's a good place.
A pretty good place to start, a pretty good way to look at it. And so I'm just going to bring up a couple of the interesting things that I found. You know, one of the things they did is what is important to women when they play Ultimate. So they list belonging to a community, access to different levels of play, meaning, and what I love about this, and because this is what I think about all the time, is they mean different levels of play based on skill, of course, right? Commitment level, of course, but also cost. So access to play that's lower cost, right, as well as access to play that's higher cost and has more travel and frills to it. Like, people want to see both. They want to see more coaches. You know, they think co-ed experiences are important for young players to learn. That came up a few times. And then really an increased visibility of female players as role models, which I think is a great piece as well. So looking through it, I'll bring up 3, I think, kind of interesting data points. There's a bunch of stuff in here, and I recommend everybody go check out the survey. You can certainly find it at withoutlimitsultimate.com and look it up. But a couple of the things that I thought were interesting is they actually asked women about the pro teams. Hmm. They said the question was, are pro teams are helpful to the growth of women's ultimate? And you had sort of an agree-disagree range. And in this results page, I'm not seeing exact numbers, but I was encouraged to see that really the number of women who agreed or strongly agreed with that statement was higher than the number of women who disagreed or strongly disagreed with that statement. And it seems obvious, I know, you know, see it so clearly, yeah, but...
You're looking at my face going, of course. Of course. It's obvious, but okay.
But so often we get this feedback, you know, from sort of the little insulated culture, or little pool in which we swim a lot that is... You know, that women want us to have more gender equity and things like that, as we talked about in the beginning of the show. And I think it's nice to see that, you know, women understand that the more the exposure of Ultimate grows, the more people know about it, the more people want to play, and that's better for everybody.
Yep.
So it was interesting to see that. And then on the gender equity piece, in terms of USAU's policy, obviously everyone who was asked whether that was important strongly agree. And it's obvious, because even if you ask me, I would strongly agree. If you're running a national membership player organization, a governing body, gender equity is a primary concern. Obvious. What was interesting about that, though, is how few respondents were aware that USA Ultimate had a gender equity policy.
Do they have a percentage?
It looks like to me that if I add the numbers up here, I'm going to get... a little over half of their respondents didn't know.
Hmm. Someone's going to take this all your numbers all together and say, but...
I know.
Nick Darling is a liar. Read numbers and he added them together, but he's a liar.
I don't want to throw numbers around with this. And I don't think that's a condemnation on the equity policy itself. I think it points to the fact that probably a lot of these respondents aren't USAU members. They're playing in rec leagues or... You know, they've left college or left club scenes and are playing different ways, and that may mean they just aren't aware of it.
But they were asked about US Ultimate and the one before that.
Yeah, I mean, they were asked if it was important, and they responded that it was. I mean, it's an interesting thing, and also when asked if they could name an example when the gender equity policy was used, only 18% could name it, which again points to a messaging problem, I think, from USAU, because I think it's used more often than that. I think I could name it sometimes when they apply it. I mean, they apply it when they do their ESPN coverage. They try to cover women's games. Now, a lot of women say, well, it's out of balance because the men always get the best slot and always get the highest billing. So maybe that's kind of the back and forth on it. But I just think that it's probably a marketing problem of that policy more than anything else.
Yeah, I don't know. Because I know that you have the policy. I couldn't tell you how it's applied. I never in my playing days felt that anything was given better. I mean, I played mixed, so I never felt like anything was given better opportunity than men's. And then it was women, then it was mixed.
Yeah, I think it was clearly men's when I played. Now, yeah. I don't know if the policy was in place when I played as clearly as it is now. But, you know, and there are more open teams, I guess, or more... I don't know what the reasons are.
You would really think mixed would be promoted the best.
That'd be interesting.
Right? Because that's what they're promoting for the Olympics. So I was, you know...
That is true.
I've been like, why is mixed not promoted as the best? If that should be the one you're riding, it should be the one. That is the most gender equitable. Right? I mean, is it not?
That is an interesting statement. It's something I'd actually never thought of before. But you're right. Since you're pushing that as your sort of world game thing, your Olympics thing, you're trying to make this idea of mixed play the centerpiece. It would seem like that would be the centerpiece of your coverage.
It would also seem as though the message should be the best players out there should play mixed, which is not the message. Because you know what it was playing. I mean, you know, hopefully this isn't like shocking to people. Hopefully it's changed, I guess. But when I played, it was open was great. Mixed is what you did if you weren't good enough. And women's was terrible, right?
Yeah,
and
mixed was what you did if you weren't good enough. If you couldn't commit the time.
Right.
Women's, I don't know if that was true. I felt like a lot of the best women played women's, and a lot of the best men played men's.
Right, but it was always like a bad match. It's like, oh, that's women's. And I would always, you know, it was something that really, really bothered me. Because I'm like, you know, you would go, you'd have people sitting on the sideline, and they're like, oh, this is women's. I'm like, shut up, man. Like, shut up. Stop saying, you know, there's too many turnovers. So what? Like, they're just not, they haven't been given near the opportunity you've given. And, you know, support them in their growing, you know, their growing phase of this sport, which they've, since I've been playing, which wow. 2007, everybody's way better. High school teams could have probably beaten
some of everybody,
teams. Yeah.
Everybody is way better.
I don't know. You know, so hopefully it's much different now. There's a lot of respect between divisions. But again, I think if gender equity was, if you asked me how I would apply gender equity, I would say then my mixed league would be my premier league. Because that is really the one that says play together.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
You have one more stat, right?
Yeah, the last point I get to is the thing that's most important, I think, to us, if we're trying to think about how we can have a positive effect here. And I think it's that the statement was, there are enough playing opportunities for women at every level. And there was, about half of the respondents either disagreed or strongly disagreed that was the case. And I think that, judging from a lot of the results in this survey, if you read the whole beginning part, one of the biggest things that they point out is the desire for more opportunities to play. And, you know, I think that applies to men and women. I think it applies to everybody. That particularly in, you know, I was talking to an organization called Urban Blazers. They're actually going to come out to our May 18th Spinners game and check it out. And I'm going to give them a little table so they can tell people what they do. But they're going to look to incorporate...
Blazers. They give everybody blazers. Please tell me that's what they do. They just put blazers
just
on
just blazers.
People.
Nice brass buttons.
Okay. If it's anything than that, they're a horrible organization.
This is going to be awkward.
I can't wait to meet them. I'm not lying. we're going to get along so well.
No, but what they do is they take kids from low-income areas in and around Philly, and, you know, they take them out to parks, take them hiking, take them to play sort of outdoor field sports, which is something they don't get to do that often because there aren't a lot of fields. So they go to rec centers and to schools, and they take these kids out on these kind of excursions. And they want to incorporate ultimate into their curriculum, creating more opportunities to play. So we're going to work with them to do that. And I think across the board, that's something that we want to see is how do we work to develop new opportunities for people to play this game. And particularly, I think, because it is imbalanced, how do we develop new opportunities for women to play this game and to get involved in it? And how do we inspire them to do so? And I think we have amazing leadership there in the Women's Club Ultimate scene. And to support them and give them more opportunities to introduce the sport to other people, you know, is something we'd love to be doing as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. That's great. You have reminded me about something. Number one, opportunity to play, so important. We talk about this all the time, that especially when it comes to women, it's a false belief to think that they were born with like the inability to compete well. Genetics have something to do with it, but until they're given fair opportunity, it's, you'll never know, right? They just have never. I mean, again, 60 years ago, there was a woman attacked in the Boston Marathon, right?
Yeah.
Because like a man jumped out of a van and tried to hit her because he was so mad she was running in a marathon, right? So again, not that far. Not that far.
Yeah, back, again, right? I think that's the theme of this episode. It wasn't that long ago. It wasn't that long ago.
But one message that I have gotten, I don't know if I've told you this yet, but one message I have gotten over the last few months is from players is that, you know what? The MLU is really making me get over this whole tournament thing. This tournament thing is not, I'm starting to realize how bad it is for me. You go in bad conditions many times, bad fields, or not optimal fields, right? They say that. They're not like, you're not playing prime fields. You're playing in some bad fields sometimes.
Sometimes some bad ones. Yeah. I've played on all levels. Some very good ones and some really terrible ones.
And we play during the summer too, so it can be massively hot. All sorts of things can go wrong. And you play a brutal sport under brutal conditions. 4 games a day, right? 4 games a day for 2 days. And I can't say how many people have sat down with me. I'm like, you know what? This one game thing is really something. Like, I get to go and give it all and then recover. And something that I want to help implement is, at the youth level, is games.
Yes.
High school A goes to high school B and plays a game. And their parents show up and watch them. This tournament thing drives me nuts.
Well, it's just, I mean, so the tournament thing is, it's going to be harder to get over in college, say, because colleges are further apart. There's not as much infrastructure for them.
I don't know if I agree with that, but okay.
I'm going to say high schools are a prime location to introduce to single games.
Easier. Sure, I'll take easier.
They're easier. High schools have buses. They're used to busing kids around to do things. Like, there's plenty of, there's more opportunity, I think, to start instilling it there. So I love that idea. I love that idea. And I think it's something, yeah, I mean, we've already started trying to facilitate that a little bit. You had a talk with, we had a talk with Greg, coaches a team, Greg Fallon, our video guy, mm-hmm. our assistant production manager. And yeah, trying to work with him to introduce him to people so they can set up games and be able to play single games.
Pensbury, too. I'm like, go play games. How many do your parents watch you? No. I'll tell you why. Tournaments, your parents love you, right? We've had this conversation before. Your parents love you. And they will love you through a tournament, but they hate it.
As Louis C.K. once said, I'm bored more than I love you.
So when you become a parent, you realize that you can be bored to death. You love your kids.
It's the hardest part of being a parent. Yeah, you can boredom.
Like, yeah. Like, but a game. So here, I'll give you a perfect example. I am watching the Seattle Rainmakers game, which was awesome. If you were there, you know. In fact, the cheer for the Nighthawks. Have I showed you the cheer for the Nighthawks yet?
You did show me that. The stopping and the... Oh, yeah. Just make the sound for me once.
No, they stomp on the ground and go... Bakaw! All at the same time. Every time
that's not a Nighthawk. That's a chicken. Are you doing it wrong or are they doing it wrong?
Look, it's a Canadian Nighthawk.
Right? Canadian Nighthawks, yeah, right? They're actually chickens. Yeah.
Look, or maybe I don't do it right. So I saw a gentleman, you know, he looked over at me. And I'm wearing a suit, so I guess he figured out who I was. But he comes up to me and he says, I just want you to know, this is just so enjoyable for me to watch this. Like, I really feel like I can, you know, like I would come to all these games. And he talks for a couple of minutes. And I'm like, so who are you, sir? Yeah. He goes, I'm Duncan Lin's father. And I thought, who Duncan Lin, who I told you earlier, played a really nice game defensively. His dad was happy to watch him. You could tell that his dad was like, look, I've gone to tournaments, but this is a little painful because I don't know what's going on and all this stuff, but here I'm here with a crowd celebrating my son. It's cool. And parents will show up to that. So we have to help with this. You know, we're in Philly, so it helps us do this here, but we just need to extend the arm out and say, start playing games against other teams, get support from your high school, find out what your wrestling team, find out who they play, and then go play the same schools they play in Frisbee, right?
Go play, like, at the same time.
Yeah.
The wrestlers don't fill a bus.
Right. Just go play and, you know, go raise some funds for that. And then you won't have to go to, like, all these tournaments, which are just, again, I say it's weird to me. First of all, it's your weekend. Like, you should be playing Thursdays, Wednesdays, Tuesdays, Mondays, right?
Yeah, let's be fair. Tournaments can be really fun. There's nothing wrong with a tournament per se. For me, it got less fun as I got older because my body recovered slower. 2-day tournament was really a 4-day tournament by the time I felt good again.
Yeah.
But they can be fun. I get the tournament thing. I get why people like it. At the same time, though, I think, particularly for high schoolers, these are, you know, for safety reasons, for, you know, for parental watching excitement.
And for funding. Right, high schools, you got to think about the high school. They're like, okay, the wrestling team wrestles and plays on Thursday. They have a meet on Thursday. You have a meet Saturday and Sunday. Like, why don't you just play one team? Like, you know, it doesn't click for them.
Yeah.
Like, if you were like, hey, we just need your football field Thursday from 3 to 5. Nobody else will be there. Okay. Go play your game. Or play on this, whatever it is. But when we start playing games, we'll get more engagement from communities around because they can come in and enjoy it. Right now, it's just this tournament that you play that nobody knows anything about. Nobody even knows what's going on. And nobody comes to watch.
Absolutely true.
So, getting back to where it started this from, this will help all of the sports, but especially the women's sports, right? They can have games too, right?
Yeah.
And then you can start, if you only have, let's put it this way, if you only have 3 women's teams, play some games. Then you'll have 4 women's teams, right? Because it'll get around, and they'll say, oh, cool. So other schools will start to see it. You can call up a school and say, hey, if you guys have an Ultimate Frisbee team, we'll come play you. And are they going to suck at first? Of course they are. It's a brand new sport. But 2-3 years from now, you'll have 10 high schools that have teams, and you'll have a circuit that they play. You'll have a season. That's cool.
Yeah.
Doesn't take that long.
Okay? Does not take that long.
I went and helped Pensbury, right? They were 10 times better than when I have helped high school teams from 5 years ago. I mean, the amount better they were was insane. And the amount better they'll be 5 years from now will be insane. So you just have to, can't be so myopic. Got to look a little forward.
Amen.
Do you know what myopic means? Because I have no clue.
I do know what it means.
Okay, good.
I'm going to let you.
Was it used right?
You used it.
Okay.
Sure.
my eye doctor always says I'm myopic.
I knew you wanted to use it. So yeah. You got it in there.
Well, whatever. All right. So we don't have too many minutes left.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're right at wrap up point today. We actually talked quite a bit. Do you have any? Were there any questions on Twitter or did we look?
There was some Twitter questions. There was one on refs, but let's get to them next week.
Sounds good. So I think that in general, then that's it. So this weekend, you're headed to Portland.
I'm going to Portland tomorrow.
That's great. You're going to get to spend some good time there.
I am.
Tomorrow.
I get to. I'm looking forward to buying the Stag some beers and hanging with Nathan Schorsch and William Kerb, talking about the future of our league and watching them play. I can't wait to see it in person.
That's going
to
be an exciting game. That'll be our MOU live game from the West Coast.
Yep.
And yeah, it should be a really good game, I think. A great, beautiful stadium up there in Portland. If you're in Portland, get out to this game. Be a good one.
Yeah, that should be a lot
3
of fun.
O'clock.
And then where are you?
There. And I'm headed to New York, headed to the Eagle's Nest.
Ooh.
Be my first time there this year.
They're playing?
They're going to be playing Boston.
Ooh.
So it's a rematch of game one.
They have to win that game.
Yeah, I feel like each week New York has figured another little part of their game out. Even though they lost to Philly last week in what was a really windy, crazy game, I feel like they've figured out a little piece of their game each week. And
real quick, if you haven't watched the Philly New York game, just watch the last 2 minutes. Jonathan Cox has a rough 2 minutes.
Oh man!
You know, the game should have been theirs, and he had should've a drop theirs. And a throwaway, and he's a phenomenal player, and he had what every player can have, which is just a terrible 2 minutes. So hopefully he bounces back and has a big game.
I'd love to see it happen. Yeah, I feel like they're like a golfer where everyone's giving them, you know, they got all these instructions. I got to get my hips through. I got to get my wrist this way. I got to get my ankles. And eventually they're going to get it all right, and then they're going to start to just swing and forget about it. Because right now they're thinking about all those pieces too much, and they need to just swing.
Do you remember when Mickelson had that massive collapse? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
Where all he had to do was bogey, right? And he triple bogey or something. He gets into the sand pit and he couldn't get it out. So, oh man. Yeah.
Golf. Anyway. Golf is the bad 2-minute sport in the world. Like, you just collapse in that game.
You know, next tournament he's back and he's swinging. So that's what Jonathan Cox needs to do.
Yeah, I think he'll be fine. And so that'll be our live stream game on the East Coast, and that'll be at 7 p.m. Eastern. So, and you can go to MOULive.com. Check that out.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, so that's it for this week. If you have any questions for us, you can get Jeff at Jeff Snader. You can get me at Nick Darling. And remember, there's no K on that Nick, just N-I-C.
N-I-C.
It's a Canadian thing, I'm told.
Yeah.
Who knew? Hey. And, or get us at... or get us at Cleats Cufflinks. And you can also email us at cleatsandcufflinks@mlultimate.com. And have a safe trip, Jeffrey.
Thank you, Nicholas.
I'll see you when you get back.
Will do.